So, picture this. You are sitting at your desk, you're trying to knock out some deep work before lunch, and a notification pops up on your screen.
Oh, I already know where this is going.
Right. It is time for your mid-year performance review. So you click the link, you open up the self-evaluation form, and you are immediately confronted with this giant, completely blank text box.
The worst.
It really is. It's asking you to detail your major accomplishments, your areas for growth, your impact over the last 6 months. And just like that, your mind goes completely blank.
Completely blank, yeah.
I mean, you genuinely cannot remember what you were working on last Tuesday, let alone what you achieved back in like February.
It is a universally painful experience, and it's entirely predictable, honestly. I want to validate that freezing sensation immediately. Because when you are staring at that blinking cursor, trying to construct a narrative of your professional worth out of thin air, the problem isn't your memory. No, not at all. The problem is a fundamental flaw in the way organizations actually design performance management. Human brains simply are not built for that kind of retrospective, high-stakes data retrieval.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to figure out exactly why these systems fail so spectacularly and, to explore a totally different approach called context-first development.
Right.
We're pulling all of this from a really fascinating July 2026 white paper by Clarity Loop. It's titled, "The Work is Already Speaking."
It's a great piece.
It really is. It deconstructs this thing we all just sort of accept as a necessary corporate evil. But before we look at the solution, we have to understand exactly why previous attempts to fix this have fallen so flat. Because, I mean, companies know the annual review is awful.
Oh, they definitely know.
Right. They've spent the last decade trying to make it continuous.
They have, and they basically ran headfirst into what the white paper calls the adoption gap.
The adoption gap.
Yeah, which is just the massive distance between what human resources designs in a theoretical vacuum and what busy, stressed-out humans can actually execute in the real world.
Right.
So HR realized the annual review was broken, right? So they added pulse surveys.
Ah.
Yep. They mandated quarterly check-ins. They rolled out all these continuous feedback apps and, scheduled more one-on-ones.
Which honestly sounds like being asked to write a detailed Yelp review for a meal you ate 3 months ago, but now you have to do it every single Tuesday.
That is exactly what it feels like.
The cognitive load of trying to remember the flavor of like an appetizer from March while you were in the middle of a stressful week in July is just impossible. I mean, I don't know if the waiter was attentive. I've had 90 meals since
Yeah,
then.
exactly.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Sure.
If a company mandates that a manager sit down and write these things out every month, doesn't that friction at least force a level of intentionality? Doesn't it force them to actually pay attention to their team?
I mean, it seems like it should, right? But in practice, it creates this really dangerous vulnerability, which is that memory arrives too late.
Okay.
When you force a busy manager to sit down and recall performance, you are opening the door wide to recency bias. Let's say someone on your team has been quietly, consistently crushing their deliverables for 5 straight months.
Okay.
But then last week, they dropped the ball on one single client email. Because the manager is filling out the form today, that one email completely overwrites 5 months of steady excellence.
Because it's fresh in their mind.
Exactly. The paper refers to this as the bias of the loudest moments.
The loudest moments.
Right. The crisis that caught on fire, the frantic late-night push to meet a deadline, those moments get all the attention. Meanwhile, the quiet, consistent work that actually keeps the business running, completely forgotten.
Wow.
So by forcing people to rely on memory, these continuous systems just turn the big annual form into a smaller form that you have to fill out more often, and usually with way less accuracy.
And the adoption just breaks down.
Completely breaks down.
Employees rush the feedback because it interrupts their actual workflow. Managers prep from these flawed, recency-biased memories, and HR just spends all their energy chasing people down to hit submit on the forms.
It's just an administrative black hole.
It really is. Now, the white paper argues this isn't just an everyday corporate annoyance anymore. This is a severe crisis right now. And when we look at the macroeconomic data they highlight, the stakes become very, very real.
Yeah, the data is staggering. The paper cites the Gallup State of the Global Workplace 2026 report.
Okay.
And they found that in 2025, global employee engagement plummeted to just 20%.
Wait, 20%?
20%.
That is
the lowest level we have seen since 2020.
So 4 out of 5 people are essentially just going through the motions. They are physically present or, you know, digitally present, but mentally checked out.
Yes. And Gallup estimates that this level of disengagement is costing the global economy roughly $10 trillion in lost productivity.
$10 trillion? That is unbelievable.
It's massive. But here is the statistic that really exposes why the memory-based performance system is collapsing. Manager engagement fell from 31% in 2022 down to 22% in 2025.
Oh, wow. That is the breaking point right there.
Exactly.
I mean, if nearly 80% of your managers are disengaged and burned out, you cannot ask them to spend 5 hours meticulously remembering and documenting their team's quarterly performance.
No, you can't.
They are barely keeping their own heads above water. Any data they put into that HR system is going to be rushed, biased garbage.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the timing of this burnout is catastrophic.
How so?
Well, the World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs report showed that employers expect 39% of workers' core skills to change by 2030.
39%.
Think about what that means. In the next few years, nearly 40% of what you know how to do right now will be obsolete. It'll be replaced by new technologies or workflows. Over 60% of employers say that these skill gaps are the major barrier to business transformation.
So we are trying to navigate this massive industrial shift using a completely broken compass.
Basically.
We have a burned out workforce, an exhausted management layer, and this mandate to completely reskill our teams.
Exactly. We absolutely must have actionable, highly accurate development signals right now.
Yeah.
We need to catch small skill gaps, you know, like someone struggling to adapt to a new AI tool.
Right.
Or maybe failing to communicate clearly in a remote setting. We need to catch those before they become systemic failures. We just cannot afford the delay of a memory-based review system anymore.
Okay, so the old method of just adding more forms is dead. The crisis is peaking. How do we actually find these development signals without adding a single ounce of administrative burden to those tapped-out managers?
This is where Clarity Loop introduces their core thesis, which is context-first development.
Context-first development.
Yes. The fundamental concept here is that growth is not an extracurricular activity.
Yeah.
It does not happen outside of work, and it shouldn't be evaluated outside of work.
Okay.
Growth happens inside the workflow itself.
Which perfectly explains the title of the paper, The Work is Already Speaking.
Right. Every single day as you go about your job, you are leaving a trail of development signals. Think about the ordinary moments.
Like what?
Like a senior developer taking 20 minutes in a code review to thoughtfully explain an edge case to a junior colleague, or someone stepping up to organize a really chaotic project thread.
Or I guess even negative things.
Exactly. Like a pattern where someone repeatedly fails to clarify requirements before starting a task. These are the actual behaviors that dictate performance.
It's literally the fabric of the day. But traditional performance systems are totally blind to it because they ask you to summarize it 6 months later.
Right.
So context-first development says, let's use the real work context that is already sitting there in your digital tools to surface these patterns.
Precisely. You don't try to remember what happened. You let a system surface what actually happened.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting because I have to push back hard on this.
Go for it.
To someone studying organizational psychology, context-first development sounds elegant. But to me, and probably to a lot of you listening right now, my alarm bells are deafening.
I don't blame you.
I mean, if you are telling me that a piece of software is going to read my Slack messages, analyze my project management tickets, and grade my emails to evaluate my performance, that sounds like a dystopian corporate surveillance state.
It really does.
If I know a machine is grading every digital interaction, it creates a massive chilling effect. I'm never going to joke around with my team again. I'm going to start writing these overly flowery, robotic messages just to game the algorithm.
It is the single most important objection you can raise. And the white paper tackles it head on.
Okay.
If this technology is used for surveillance or automated judgment, like if software is deciding your bonus or your promotion based on keyword tracking, it will destroy trust instantly. The goal of context-first development is strictly to surface evidence so that humans can have better, more grounded conversations. But to prove that this could actually be done responsibly without becoming, you know, a creepy monitor, Clarity Loop didn't just theorize.
What did they do?
They ran a massive empirical study to test the engine's capability and more importantly, it's restraint.
Okay, that makes me feel slightly better, because a fear of surveillance is totally valid unless you have hard proof that the system knows how to behave. Tell me exactly how this study worked. What were they looking at?
So this study was called CollabSense, and it was an open research partnership between Clarity Loop and Edinburgh Napier University.
Okay.
They wanted to test if real collaboration data could produce evidence-supported development signals. And to do this ethically and transparently, they used public data. They analyzed over 3,300 public GitHub interactions.
GitHub makes a lot of sense for this. Just for those who might not live in the software world, open source projects on GitHub are basically pure, transparent digital collaboration. Developers are constantly submitting code, reviewing each other's work, debating architecture, solving bugs out in the open.
Spot on. The researchers looked at massive open source projects like the data analysis library Pandas and the container orchestration system Kubernetes. But the key here is how the AI engine looked at the data.
Right.
It wasn't just searching for keywords like good job or mistake.
Yeah.
It analyzed the interaction graphs.
Okay, let's break that down. When you say it analyzed the interaction graphs, what is it actually looking at to deduce a coaching moment or a growth opportunity?
It looks at the sequence, the tone, and the resolution of the interaction.
Okay, give me an example.
So, for example, developer A submits a new piece of code, right? A pull request. Developer B reviews it and points out a potential memory leak. But they don't just say, hey, this is broken.
Right.
They explain why it's a memory leak and they suggest an alternative structure.
Mm.
Then developer A incorporates that feedback, pushes a fix, and thanks developer B.
Got it.
The AI engine looks at that entire flow. It recognizes the constructive tone of the feedback, the clear explanation of a complex concept, and the rapid, adaptable response from the original coder.
Ah, I see. So it sees developer B demonstrating strong technical coaching and communication skills, and it sees developer A demonstrating adaptability and openness to feedback.
Exactly.
It's recognizing the behavioral pattern, not just counting the number of comments.
Right. And the first finding from the study was really reassuring regarding tone. Across these major projects, the mean sentiment was 6.63 out of 10.
Okay, so fairly positive.
Meaning the vast majority of interactions were highly constructive and professional.
But here is the true test of the AI, right? Anyone who has played around with tools like ChatGPT knows that generative AI is basically a chronic people pleaser.
Oh, absolutely.
If you ask it a question, even if it doesn't know the answer, it will confidently hallucinate something just to fill the blank space. If this system is supposed to replace my performance review, it cannot be guessing.
What's fascinating here is that the researchers knew that, so they explicitly tested the engine for restraint. They gave it what they called sparse data sets.
Sparse data sets. Okay.
Let's use an analogy. A sparse interaction graph is like trying to write a deep psychological profile of a coworker based purely on overhearing them say, hold the elevator door, once a year.
Right. There is just no history there.
Exactly. A dense graph, on the other hand, is like reading a year's worth of letters between two best friends. There is rich, repeated context.
So they fed the elevator scenario. They fed it sparse data from long-term contributors who rarely collaborated directly. What did the AI do? Did it invent a coaching moment?
It produced zero growth opportunities. Absolutely zero.
Wow. That is a massive relief.
It is the most critical finding in the paper. A trustworthy system must possess restraint. The engine looked at the sparse interactions and essentially said, I do not have enough evidence here to make a fair contextual observation.
That's amazing.
It proved that restraint is a core feature of the design. It only produced signals when there were repeated, dense collaboration patterns that could be interpreted with care.
So it passes the restraint test. Hmm. It doesn't hallucinate. But what about when it did have the dense data?
Right.
When it had the year of letters and said, okay, here is a potential growth opportunity for this person. How accurate was it? Because if it's flagging irrelevant things, it's just creating more noise for the manager.
So the researchers had human reviewers independently assess a sample of 20 growth opportunities generated by the engine. And the results were incredibly strong.
Really?
Yeah. The human reviewers verified that 90% of the growth opportunities were at least partially supported by concrete evidence in the text. And even more importantly, 85% of them were judged to be genuine, actionable improvement areas.
Okay, let me make sure I understand the practical application of this.
Yeah.
90% of the time, a human manager could look at the signal the software generated, click into it, and say, yes, I see exactly why the system flagged this. Like, here's the specific conversation thread where the project scope got derailed,
Mm.
or where this person did a brilliant job de-escalating a frustrated client.
Exactly.
It is not a black box giving an employee a mysterious score of 4 out of 5. It is literally just pointing a flashlight at the actual work.
That is the perfect way to phrase it. It does not validate automated scoring. It validates that context-first development can surface empirical evidence that humans can actually inspect, challenge, and use in a conversation.
So what does this all mean for how a company actually implements this? Because the technology clearly can read work context accurately, which means the rules governing how it is used become the most important part of this whole equation.
Without a doubt.
If we are replacing the blank text box with an AI engine that reads our work, how do we enforce guardrails to keep it from becoming that surveillance state we talked about earlier?
The white paper is adamant that the technology alone isn't the solution, the framework around it is. They lay out 6 design principles, but they all revolve around one golden rule.
Which
AI should structure the context, but humans must retain total accountability for the final judgment.
Let's explore that, because I can easily see a lazy manager just looking at the AI's summary and using it as a rubber stamp.
Oh, for sure.
Like, well, the computer said you struggle with communication, so I'm putting that on your review. How does the framework prevent that?
It prevents it through the principle of inspectable evidence.
Mm-hmm.
If the system flags a communication issue, the manager cannot just accept a summary. They have to look at the underlying work examples the system is pointing to.
Okay.
If the manager looks at the actual email thread and says, actually, the AI misunderstood the context here. This employee was being appropriately firm with a difficult vendor. The manager dismisses the signal.
Right.
The human is accountable for the reality. The AI just reduces the memory burden of finding the interaction.
That makes total sense. It supports growth by giving you a starting point, but it demands human oversight. What about the trap of volume equating to performance?
Right. That's a big one.
Like, if I send 300 Slack messages a day, am I a better collaborator than the person who sends 10?
Never. The framework explicitly forbids using volume as a proxy for performance. It also specifically warns against inferring disengagement from silence.
Interesting.
Think about a software engineer or a data scientist deep in a flow state. They might be tackling a highly complex, critical problem and haven't sent a single message in 4 hours.
Right. They're just working.
Exactly. That silence is a requirement for deep work. It is not a negative performance signal. The system cannot score people, it cannot rank them, and it can never replace the nuanced judgment of a manager who understands the context of their team's working styles.
It's really about starting from the work, focusing on actual development, reducing friction so people actually adopt it, and making sure every piece of feedback is anchored in transparent reality.
Exactly.
Let's bring this all the way back to you listening to this deep dive right now. Think about how this shift could actually transform your daily life at work. Picture that mid-year review again.
Oh, the blank docs.
The blank box. But this time, instead of spending hours agonizing over a blank self-evaluation form, trying to invent memories, you just sit down with your manager. The friction is completely gone.
Yeah.
You aren't worried about recency bias because your manager isn't just remembering the mistake you made last week. Instead, you are both looking at a dashboard of specific, recent AI surfaced examples of your actual work over the last 6 months.
It's all right there.
Right. Your manager says, hey, let's look at this specific project handover from April. The way you mapped out the dependencies here was phenomenal, but the timeline communication got a little tangled. Let's talk about how to smooth that out next time. You are having a grounded, evidence-based conversation about reality.
It fundamentally changes the paradigm mm-hmm. from managing performance after the fact to developing performance in the flow of work. But this actually raises a final, really important question,
yeah.
and I want to leave the listener with something to mull over.
Let's hear it.
If our daily digital work is already speaking, as the paper says, if we are constantly generating this rich, contextual evidence of our ability to adapt, to coach others, and to problem solve.
The actual behavioral skills that every company claims they are desperate to hire for?
Exactly. If this data exists, will the future of hiring eventually shift away from static resumes?
Oh, wow.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Right now, a resume is just a self-evaluation form for your entire career.
That's so true.
It is another retrospective summary based on flawed memory. You write a PDF claiming you are a proactive problem solver, and the hiring manager just has to take your word for it.
Right.
But imagine a world where your next job application doesn't involve a resume at all. Imagine securely porting your authenticated, context-first behavioral data to a new employer. You wouldn't just be telling them you're a good team player. You would be providing verified contextual evidence of exactly how you collaborate, how you handle feedback, and how you grow.
That is wild. It would completely upend how we prove our worth in the job market. If the work is already speaking, eventually, future employers are going to demand to listen to it too.
Exactly.
It makes total sense, but it is a massive paradigm shift. For now, though, I think we can just be grateful for the prospect that the days of staring at a blank, agonizing self-evaluation form on a Tuesday afternoon might finally be coming to an end.
Cheers to that.
No more making up memories, just real work, transparent evidence, and actual growth. Thanks for diving deep with us today. We will catch you on the next one.